Hey, Melinda, how are you?
Good, Emily. How are you?
I'm good. So
Good.
tell me how you're feeling about the idea of Senator Hillary Clinton becoming Secretary of State.
Well, as you know, I'm not an enthusiast of this idea, mainly because I don't see her foreign policy positions as so in line with Obama's. And when I voted for Obama, I thought that his vision of our foreign policy was quite different from McCain's, and as some McCain aides have pointed out, Hillary Clinton's is not so different from McCain's. The Republican response to this idea has been pretty cordial. So, I'm hoping that when her aides are now saying that she's really torn and she's not sure she can walk away from taking a role in health care reform in the Senate, what that means is that maybe her husband doesn't want to give up all of the information he would have to give up to let this happen for her. How about you?
Well, I actually found myself sort of a flutter about the idea in a way that surprised me. But wait, so first, I'm interested in this whole idea of them having different policy views and how much that matters. I mean, isn't it
Right.
during a campaign, obviously, when you're running against someone, you emphasize the sharp edges and the ways in which you disagree. But could we imagine her modulating her views to some degree? And then the other thing I was wondering about is that in some ways circumstances have changed in a way that favors some of her stances. For example, the relative success of the surge in Iraq and the fact that things are sort of calm there would mean that, yes, Obama is still going to plan to withdraw the troops, but there isn't this same sense of desperate urgency about Iraq. And so I was just wondering what you thought about the potential for them coming together at this point, policy-wise.
Well, I guess I would argue that I don't see the surge as such a big success because I don't think it's helped move the political ball down the field any, but a rare sports metaphor from me.
And yet I enjoyed it. Keep them coming.
of course, their differences will be less acute than it sounded when they were campaigning against each other and throwing bombs at each other every day, rhetorically speaking. But I think that there are huge foreign policy differences that would matter. I mean, I think it's a big deal not only that he opposed the war when she was pretty enthusiastic about it, not just initially, but for a long time. I mean, her position is being described fairly, I think, as pretty neocon in terms of not domestic policy, but foreign. So even though I'm sure their objectives are the same, and in fact, I have no problem thinking that their objectives are the same as McCain's. I mean, everybody wants us to be well defended and secure, but I'm not so sure that how they go about it, there's as much common ground as I'd like to see. And I think that he probably would be more inclined to pull troops out more quickly than she.
Well, one of the
Don't
things
you?
that's interesting to me about those doubts you're expressing is thinking about them in terms of Thomas Friedman's column earlier this week, in
Right.
which, I mean, that was a really interesting point he made about
Sure
how
was.
you have to have the ear of the president to be the Secretary of State, and you really, to be an effective secretary, and you really need to be seen as speaking for the president. And if other
Right.
countries can sense distance between the two of you, then they sort of just immediately start going around you.
I thought that was a very smart column. And how could there not be distance between these two, no matter what grown-ups they are? And I think they both are, of course, professionals. But, I think that foreign leaders would be very happy to exploit the perception of differences between them.
Yeah, and I find myself wanting to have faith in the idea that if these two camps decide for themselves that they can come together, that they will present this unified front, and that it could be this chance for the Democratic Party and these kind of two separate towering and also sort of glowering houses to get past their differences and really, work together, and
Right.
that then if you, I mean, I agree with you that that is a leap of faith, and I think you're right to point out the potential problems with it. But if you imagine a world in which they're seeing more eye to eye, and the obvious, psychological traumas of the past are put aside, then you have this woman who has this incredible mastery of policy detail, all of this star power, you know, previous relationships with a lot of these rulers, you know, committing, right. throwing herself into this job, which seems in some ways like tailor-made for her at a moment in which we need a really effective diplomat.
I guess I don't see it as tailor-made for her, not only on their policy differences, but, you know, we've talked also on the blog about her managerial problems in the past, both when she was trying to shepherd the original health care reform legislation through and in running her own presidential campaign. So while I think you were right that that's only a part of the job, you know, I think it's a pretty important part. I do think that people who supported Obama, as we did, a big part of his appeal was saying he's going to bring everybody together. So, what does that mean? It means you're coming together with people you may not like or agree with. And so, you know, this is where we really have to, you know, match the words of the campaign season.
Right, and there's some risk inherent in that, obviously.
Right.
Right.
But she seems to be walking it back, though, don't you think? Her people seem to be, with all this talk about her being torn, it makes me think that it's not such a done deal as it seemed to be a few days ago.
Right. Well, I thought your post was really interesting, this idea that, you know, maybe Obama offered this, figuring in some sense it's a win-win. If
right.
she turns it down, or if it seems that Bill Clinton's shenanigans mean that she can't take the job, then he still gets credit, Obama does, for having made this
right.
very magnanimous gesture. And if they can work through all of that, then, you know, we've sort of cleaned up or cleared Bill Clinton of all these nefarious doings that we
right.
imagine him involved in. I thought that was totally smart and diabolical in the best sense that you were thinking about it.
Diabolical, you betcha. I don't agree with the other critics who think she would be constantly undercutting him. I mean, I do think that if she takes this, not because, you know, she doesn't have that in her, but because it wouldn't behoove her. I mean, I think that she would look bad if she did that.
Yeah.
So that's not one of my chief concerns.
Right, and that has been one of the things raised. I mean, let's talk a little bit about the Bill drama, because for me,
right.
this is the sort of, this is the wrong word, but it's like the tragedy of this whole choice is that here is this job that in my mind is well suited to her, more than the presidency, and this role that she could play that potentially could really help this new administration. And we have Bill, kind of the ghost of Bill, flitting in from the wings, threatening to derail the whole thing because he's so busy accepting
right.
these enormous fees from, you know, miners who want deals in Kazakhstan and whatever Middle Eastern country
right.
is willing to
and
pay him.
And who paid for his library and who are all his donors. And, you know, there's a lot of potentially embarrassing info in his records. And I personally would just be shocked if he opened the whole thing up. I mean, if he did that, I think it's a realistic concern that we could spend years. I mean, we could make the Clinton transition look smooth by comparison if Obama has to spend, you know, the first chunk of his presidency embroiled in this drama of, oh no, you know, here come the Clinton scandals all over again and fresh ones to boot.
Right, and if you're right about that and that seems utterly plausible, then this is just such a sad, you know, yet another chapter in this incredible and utterly confounding marriage that we're confronted
right.
with, where Bill Clinton, you know, campaigned really hard for Hillary Clinton. I had these moments where I felt like maybe he was undermining her, but certainly he was out there trying.
I think there were both. I think there were moments
yeah.
when he was just working his heart out, and there were moments when he was, you know, the other Bill was at work, too, undoing
right.
all his hard work. And
right,
I'm sure,
right.
yeah, who knows which was more happening more often.
Right, which wins in the
yeah,
end.
Yeah,
but, you
exactly.
know, now if she doesn't take this post because he's unwilling to open his books or there's just too much muck in there once they're open, then mm-hmm. he really has undermined her. And one starts to wonder what is in this marriage for her. I mean, I guess we could say, like, starts to wonder. One has been wondering that for, you know, more than a decade or longer, perhaps.
Right.
But we have this really concrete example in which being part of this power couple is what could end up blocking her from this position. And they're just, you know, as a feminist, there just seems something so utterly troubling about that to me.
But I think they're so intermingled, all their business dealings and their, you know, their process by which they sort things out, you know, by all reports. I don't think there's any, you know, they can get a divorce, but I don't think that would be easy. They'd be easily separated in that yeah. sense. And I'm not sure if she doesn't end up taking this because of him, maybe that would end up being the best thing. I mean, maybe this isn't the best job for her. I think there's no question she has a huge future in the Senate if she decides to stay there.
Well, you could be right, but I'm still going to feel pissed if the reason she doesn't take it is him. Even if it ends right. up being the best thing, it just seems like a bad reason. I mean, he has had his moment, and he made $10 million last year. Couldn't he just sort of cut back? I mean, why do we have this former president who's out there doing things that seem like they can't see the light of day?
Well, you have former, you know, this, that, and the other thing out doing things. You know, look at John Edwards. Look at so many others. Who,
right, Ted, but that's Ted not a model. Stevens, we don't need, I mean, more of them.
No, but I just mean, you know, it happens very regularly.
Right, but I shouldn't be shocked. I shouldn't profess
yeah,
to be shocked.
Exactly.
Yes, I hear you.
I just think it's almost at this point, after 35, whatever it's been, years, there's no Hillary without Bill and Bill without Hillary. I think it's very difficult to separate out, you know, who helped whom more. I think you could really make the case that he never would have been president without her, and you can make the case equally that she wouldn't have gone to the Senate without him. So I'm not sure I would see, even if she didn't get to take this job because of him, that he had overall held her back. Mm-hmm. You know, would she have ever gone to the Senate if she had married someone else we'd never heard of? Maybe, maybe not.
It's so hard to know. I mean,
right,
those are these
impossible.
Can't really play back those counterfactuals. Can we talk about abortion for a little bit? Because you have a really
sure.
interesting piece going up today that I want to hear more about.
Well, the piece that I wrote was came out of the Catholic bishops met for their semi-annual meeting in Baltimore last week. So when I read the news coming out of Baltimore and the bishops making very harsh statements about Obama, saying that the Obama administration was going to be challenging freedom of religion in America, was under attack by an Obama administration, I was really skeptical. I mean, my first reaction was, oh, you know, it's not even parade day yet. Do we have to, like, be raining on the parade before it even happens?
Right, right.
And, you know, the most, to me, immediately seeming ludicrous thing in it was them saying that all Catholic hospitals in the country might have to close as a result of Obama's enthusiasm for abortion rights. And at first I thought, that's ridiculous. What are you saying? A third of all the hospitals in America might have to close their doors? That would be disastrous for a healthcare system that's struggling already.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, after looking into it, I do feel convinced that the threat is a real one.
And why is that?
There's something called the Freedom of Choice Act that's been introduced a number of times, but has not come up for a serious vote, and by that I mean was in no actual danger from my perspective, I guess, of passing for the last 15 years. What this would do, supporters of the bill say it's simple, it would just codify Roe v. Wade. Opponents of the bill say it goes well beyond Roe to establish the fundamental right of abortion, and would, even its supporters say, automatically nullify any state, local law, or regs that limit abortion in any way up to the time of fetal viability.
Hmm.
Well, you know, there are a lot of things that would do. It would, you know, parental consent, informed consent. But the thing that I think is you know, most surprising and could be most dangerous is it would nullify the freedom of conscience laws that let Catholic hospitals who get Medicaid, Medicare, public funds, and do other OBGYN services, it would not allow them to have that out for freedom of conscience and decide not to perform abortions. And I really do believe that if it came to it, the bishops would, they said, not even sell the hospitals because, you know, by their lights, that would be material cooperation with an intrinsic evil. So they would shutter the hospitals before they would sell them if they were going to be forced to do this procedure. So I would really be sorry to see Obama, for whom I have very high hopes, not only, you know, start out his administration with this huge fight he doesn't need when there's so many other crises on the table. But, you know, he won Catholics by 9 points, which mm-hmm. is huge. I mean, Bush won by 5 points, and they thought that was major.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of pro-life voters, Catholic voters, though I wouldn't say they voted on abortion, I would say that the pro-life argument that, you know, it was would be really great to get somebody in who would lower the need and number of abortions through economic policies, I think that allowed those voters to vote on the economy and vote for Obama.
Yeah, it's hard for me to imagine a consequence as dramatic and disastrous as the one you're mapping out actually happening, because it would upset the political balance. I mean, there's no push in this country for Catholic hospitals to perform abortions, not, you know.
Except that's what, I'm afraid that's what this law would do, so I would hope that there would be some exception for that, but that doesn't exist in the law as it's currently written.
Right, but I mean, there's a few steps down the road. There's the actual drafting of the statute, there's, like, what would be, you know, a fix that could be embedded in it so that we wouldn't have that problem, that Congress would make it clear. And then there's also judicial interpretation and courts, you know, trying to understand what Congress was after. But one thing I'm really interested in with this whole scenario is the way in which it compares to what the Bush administration says that it's planning to do on its way out, which is that, you know, Mike Leavitt, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, has been talking about passing regulations that would require family planning clinics that do abortions to consider applicants for hire who find abortion objectionable. And, you know, there's this set of regulations that is also supposed to be protecting freedom of conscience, playing out on the totally opposite side of the spectrum, which the family planning clinics are objecting to. And the contrast here really points out how tricky it is when you have, you know, these institutions that are operating based on a set of principles, and yet they have to in some way grapple with anti-discrimination law in this country.
Right.
And also we have this matter of government funding, which does give the government much more power over how clinics and hospitals operate.
Absolutely. Well, from what I understand about this proposed change to the HHS regs, it's that it actually came about because there were complaints from pro-life providers that they were being discriminated against and that they were under a lot of pressure, even with these freedom of conscience laws in place, that there was no reg to implement the laws and that they did not feel adequately protected. So ironically, this proposed change that's being accused of being discriminatory came about because it's the pro-life providers who felt they were being pressured and discriminated against. I personally am not convinced by this argument that there would be these people who are pro-life who would show up at the clinic that performs abortion saying, I want a job, and, oh, now that I've been hired, haha, I don't believe in this, so I'm taking a coffee break for the next 3 years. See you on payday. I mean, I just don't see that happening. And
it's another implausible circumstance.
Exactly. Yeah. And under, you know, in 46 states, they have these freedom of conscience laws, and I've never heard of a case like that. Why would, in reality, I just don't think it would happen, just like you don't think in reality.
But all these hospitals are going to close. Well, it is so funny how it's easy to see what's implausible when you're less, like, caught up in the actual fear of something going on.
Right.
The other just sort of extra layer of complexity I wanted to add here is that one of our colleagues, Dahlia Lithwick, we were emailing this week about how this whole freedom of conscience, all these concerns, map right. out against a different case in South Dakota where the state mm-hmm. is requiring doctors to read a particular script about how
right.
the fetus is a living being,
human person, it's constituted. Right?
Yeah, and this all of these problems of governments requiring certain kinds of speech or telling,
right.
you know, clinics or hospitals that they have to deal with people in a way that involves those people's speech. It's just very tricky,
right.
these kind of First Amendment
right.
cases that come up against against abortion, I suppose, in one sense, but also just against the practice of medicine more generally,
right.
because from the point of view of doctors, it's quite alarming. There was just a big editorial in the New England Journal of Medicine this week pointing out that this is really antithetical to how doctors perform healthcare, to have the state telling them to provide information which they may see as medically inaccurate.
Right. And which pro-life providers would say they don't want to have to do what they don't believe in.
Right, right.
So, you know, there's freedom at risk on both sides. I just think it would be a shame at this moment when Obama really has brought people together. I mean, even on this issue, I think we're the closest we've ever been to taking this issue off the electoral table.
Right.
And actually, paradoxically, getting to work on it. I mean, getting to do what we agree we could do together to lower the need and number of these procedures.
Right, right.
So
no,
I agree
with you.
To see these tensions heightened at a moment when we might actually be ready to find some common ground.
Right. I mean, this whole question of, you know, entering into a fight that you don't want to have as a new president, and the obvious example from the Clinton
right.
administration is
right.
his the pushing for gays in the military.
Right.
Yeah, which, you know, however noble a cause, kind of derailed the presidency in its early days, took a lot of momentum away,
right.
and didn't work in the end, and
right.
turned into exactly
right.
the kind of destructive distraction
right.
that you're fearing. So
that's a good point.
I mean,
this could make, if this actually happened, it would make Don't Ask the Fuhrer over Don't Ask, Don't Tell look like, you know.
All right, well, I'm going to, given how well Obama's campaign was run, I, like you said, I'm not raining on the parade before inauguration. I'm going to hang on to the belief that these guys are smart, they know what they're doing, they're not going to let their entire agenda get screwed by a badly written Freedom
right.
of
well,
Choice
that's
Act.
My hope also.
Maybe that's too optimistic, but I'm going to count on that.
No, we're going to go with it while we can.
Exactly, exactly. So, hey, Melinda, it was really fun to talk to you this afternoon.
And you, Emily.
As
Take
always.
Care.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.